Well, Len, quite an exciting finish to the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines last weekend. And, you know, as we discussed here on the podcast last week, I thought Jon Rahm could be a guy on a mission after what happened to him at the Memorial, being forced to withdraw from the tournament after Saturday's round and a six-shot lead due to a positive COVID test. And sure enough, he came back, put it all together, and an incredible up and down from the bunker on 18 and holding off
Oosthuizen.
Anyway, beat Louis, who got another second-place finish, one of the several he's had in majors. Quite a wild wrap-up to the U.S. Open.
You know, it was one of the most captivating U.S. Opens for the final round. I kind of thought for the first three, it was more of a ho-hum thing. The Rahm really brought the place to life there. Reaction to the COVID thing, I think what really helped him was that he kept his cool throughout all of it, accepted his fate at the Memorial, didn't let it distract him. He spoke very well of the whole situation after the U.S. Open was over, that these things would just happen. I'm not mad at anybody. Life has to go on, and we have to be aware of COVID. And he said all the right things. So his head was in the right place for a performance like that. But I look back on the final round there as those two putts that he held down the stretch when he was behind and chasing. I thought that's what won it for him. I mean, those were really crucial putts. So one of them, a big breaker, that happened to fall. And it was really a fine U.S. Open in the end. It was one that I think we'll all think about for a while because Rahm was outstanding. I mean, we saw him at the BMW last year holding a 60-footer to win. So it's exciting golf, and it's something to get better. He's one of those who's going to be in the Olympic Games too. So, you know, we got a lot of good Jon Rahm ahead of us.
It was quite a leaderboard on Sunday. Who could ask for a better one? You know, Jon Rahm was in the mix. Bryson DeChambeau was in the mix. Brooks Koepka was in the mix. Rory McIlroy was in the mix. So there was a lot of people that really created quite a great leaderboard throughout play on Sunday.
Sunday was the story there. It seemed like cream really rose to the top that day. I was kind of feeling like, boy, we're not getting the names we would have expected. Nothing wrong with Louis Oosthuizen at all, but he's got a proven record in the majors. He's all these runner-up finishes. Plus, he'd won one. He won a British, so he's a quality player. But it sure made for a great U.S. Open.
Well, it was the last U.S. Open for USGA CEO and executive director Mike Davis after 30 years. He said on TV he felt like it was time to move on, and he is going to work in golf course design with Tom Fazio too and the Fazio group. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of projects he gets involved in, and or if there's courses that think getting Mike Davis involved could help them get, you know, a big USGA championship. And you know, Len, you and I have talked about this in the past. We knew what happened at Cog Hill with them bringing in Rees Jones, the Open doctor, and then David Fay suggesting that the U.S. Open could happen there if they went and got Rees. And by the time they got Rees and did the course and brought it back to what the USGA would like, all of a sudden Mike Davis is in charge. And he's not really a big Rees guy. He's more of a Ben Crenshaw, Bill Kaur, or Gil Hanse guy for golf courses. So, you know, the real question, Michael Wan is coming in there and starting next week on July 1st, his first day on the job. The question is, will he have a guy? Will he have an architect that might be the guy that he wants to call on when he looks at U.S. Open courses down the road? And speaking of which, even though we're about 7-8 years away from the next available U.S. Open, early reports coming out of Michigan say Oakland Hills South, with the Gil Hanse renovation now complete, people up there saying U.S. Open back there may not be out of the question.
Yeah, you know, looking back on that, it sets the stage for all kinds of possibilities from Juan. But looking back on it, the Rees Jones renovation at Dubstred really was backfired on the Chicago scene because players didn't like it. They complained, and it wound up that Coghill no longer became a, took a little while, but that was no longer even a PGA Tour site, much less a U.S. Open site. And now I have a feeling that we're in for some different kind of U.S. Opens. I think that Mike Wann is going to bring a whole different look to the USGA. And not that Mike Davis was all bad at all. I don't mean to be critical of him, but I think that we're going to see a different, I think you're right, a different architect. That Gil Hans is the hot architect at the moment. Maybe it's him. Maybe he seems to be the guy that, if you can make your, it's arguable. I mean, you could go Crenshaw Coor. That's always a good one. I mean, you know, there are other good architects out there, but Gil Hans is the hot number right now. So, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Oakland Hills is back in the mix anyway. So, it's gonna be interesting. Golf is gonna have a whole new outlook with a new leadership at the USGA.
Well, one guy I think whose profile is going to emerge is Kyle Franz. And, you know, I met with Kyle down in March in Southern Pines over at his office at Ross Resorts, Pine Needles, Mid Pines, Southern Pines Country Club. There's a great feature out this week how they're restoring the lost hole from Donald Ross's original design at Southern Pines Country Club. But the Pine Needles will be hosting the Women's Open next year, and I'm sure that Michael Wann has seen Kyle's work on a couple of these U.S. Open, Women's U.S. Open courses. And, you know, I got to believe that if Michael Wann is looking for a new guy, you know, Kyle Franz could be that guy. He's done some U.S. Women Open courses of late, and he's starting to do some other courses too that have been had some ties to the USGA. And you know, when you look at his background of working with Tom Doak and working with Gil Hans and working with Ben and Bill and having an office right there in the Pinehurst area, you know, he could be a guy that could be emerging on Michael Wann's radar.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. His Kyle's resume and the fact that he's worked with so many of these different guys makes him, I would say, an odds-on favorite to be the new hot guy, especially with the Pinehurst connection, man. Pine Needles. I mean, Pine Needles is, you know, for the women, that's been a regular site. The Legends had their tournament there when they were the Legends Tour, when it was the U.S. Senior Women's Open. That was the second version right after Chicago Golf hosted the first one. He's an odds-on favorite. I can't think of anybody who would, of the young architects, of the up-and-comers type of architects, who would be a better choice than him. That would be my pick, too. I think he's the guy.
Well, there was some talk about the Olympic Games in the last couple of days, and that a few more of the major names have decided to not go. There's a variety of reasons, scheduling conflicts, concerns about COVID, the restrictions that are still in place in Japan that some people are now uncomfortable with as things have opened up here in the United States. I'm not sure, but it'll be interesting to see who the Olympic golf field turns out to be when Tokyo starts next month.
I can understand all these players who are not going. I really can. I don't think if I was a top level player, I would give real serious consideration to not going to the Olympics. It seems like heresy to say something like that. But given the health issues going on in Japan, you're talking about missing one tournament it's going to have a 60 player field. You've got all these other playing opportunities. You're giving up a lot of time. I don't know how much an Olympic golf medal means. Compared to a Masters or a U.S. Open or a PGA or a British Open or a FedEx Cup. It's too bad that the Olympic field is really, you know, it isn't anything like the fields for the majors. Rahm will be there, though. I mean, that's saying something. He's certainly a top player, and Matsuyama will be there. So they've got good players there, but it's certainly not what you would call in any way, shape, or form a strong knock your socks off kind of field for the Olympic Games.
Len, it is tournament time here in Chicago this week, one of about 3 weeks that we're overloaded with tournaments in the same week. And this week we have the Western Golf Association National Boys Junior Championship. We have the Women's Western Golf Association National Junior Girls Championship. The boys playing at Onwensia Club in Lake Forest. The girls at the Aurora Country Club, both clubs with a great long history to them. And then also the CDGA Amateur, the 101st edition, is being played at Bull Valley Country Club up in Bull Valley, Woodstock area. And we're hoping the guys up there can play before the storm that's being talked about this afternoon might get there and interrupt play. But there is a possibility that that one could end a little early because Nick Tenuta has jumped out on top of Brett Tom 40. 6 up through the first 16 holes today on the first 18. So if that pace continues, they certainly won't have to go all 36 holes.
Boy, is that a change from the last CDGA Amateur, which was one of the real epics in that tournament's rich history. Jordan Less against Perkins in a battle of players who could have played this year, but both of them are preparing to turn pro very shortly. Less will play in the Illinois Open, and Perkins wants to make his PGA Tour debut at the John Deere Classic. So that could have been a great rematch, but instead, this is an interesting final. I think we get we have a public course player against a private club member in the one that's in progress today. And the winning the Chicago District Amateur is certainly a feather in anybody's cap who's won it. It's always been one of my favorite tournaments, although it hasn't always been the highest profile of the Chicago area events. But I think this will be this final seems like it's a one-sided thing right now, and weather hampered, that doesn't help it either. But always a title worth winning, well worth winning.
Len, the match at the CDGA Amateur, Nick Tenuta and Brett Tom 40, they have just finished the first 18, and Tenuta still holds that 6-up lead that we were talking about. So he is 6-up. Halfway through, and we'll see how play continues. Or knowing, you know, those players, they may elect to skip the longer lunch and the break and keep right on going because it's believed between 1 and 2 o'clock, heavy rains could hit that area. And if they want to get done in front of that, it would be smart to get out there and get back at it again as soon as possible. In fact, you know, the news came out on Monday after severe storms hit the Chicago area here on Sunday night. Believe it or not, 85-mile-an-hour winds were detected over the corner of Mistwood Golf Club out in Romeoville, and crews had a little bit of a cleanup on Monday. But fortunately for Mistwood, when that storm got out over the big lake that runs in between the Kelpie's Corner holes 14 through 17, the storm died out pretty quickly, or at least most of the steam got knocked out of it. But we haven't had any reports of major damage at any of the golf courses, at least so far anyway, even though there was some homes in Naperville and Woodridge that suffered. We haven't heard about any serious problems from any of the golf courses.
Yeah, I thought that I was worried when I heard that the weather hitting there, that the tournament at Aurora could be jeopardized, because that's right on, you know, very close to the edge of Naperville. Now, it's really fortunate that Mistwood avoided some damage there, because, you know, that club is going to be very, very much in evidence in the next few weeks with the Illinois Women's Open and the Illinois State Amateur coming pretty close at the same, you know, very close together at Mistwood in the same year. Two big events in one club like that is a rarity. Certainly don't need any weather problems for those two events.
Well, then, unfortunately, tomorrow for the semifinals and the final matches at Aurora Country Club for the Women's Western Golf Association, 65% chance of rain tomorrow. So the question is, how much are they going to get? Are they going to get any? I got to believe they're going to get hit a little bit at least, and hopefully it's not too heavy. and they can get through the final three matches out there tomorrow without any serious delays. In the meantime, we actually have a girl from Illinois who has won the medalist, Shannon Vogler from Moline. Shot a second round 77 yesterday, but on a very windy day. And after being a bit over par early, she parred the last seven holes pretty much coming in to hang on and win the medalist award there by one shot.
Yeah, I'm surprised that that's quite a performance against a very national caliber field there. I was kind of surprised that her name didn't come up. I don't think she probably wasn't there, but the Illinois State Women's Amateur was the week before at Pine Meadow. And I noticed that they usually, I remember in the past, the Illinois State champion was frequently and expected to be a contender in the women's Western, and it just didn't happen this year. But those are good scores by the girl from Moline. I wonder if she's a regular player out at TPC Deer Run, where the John Deere Classic will soon be coming up.
Well, Len, I believe that she is a recruit headed to the University of Michigan. So another one that is escaping from the an Illinois player escaping from the state of Illinois to play college golf. Len, you know, a couple days ago, I got together with friends, went out and played some golf at Tana Farms. Hadn't been out there since you and I went out there to play golf something like 13 and 14 years ago, maybe. At the time, they had just built the big barn with the T.F. Booney's restaurant that had one of the great burgers of all times that we've ever really had at a golf course around here. And I was looking forward to sinking my teeth back into one of those. But believe it or not, right now, and whether it's a COVID thing or not, they're selling hot dogs and they're selling bratwurst, but we couldn't find the big half-pound cheeseburger with all sorts of other good things on it. So just disappointing there. The course has matured quite a bit since you and I were there. As a matter of fact, I don't know how much you remember about it, but that was a nine-hole course for years that got expanded into 18 holes. And of course, the clubhouse had just gotten redone, but you know, in 14 years, it's grown in kind of nicely. There is a fair amount of blind shots because of wetland areas that come out of some ponds. And perhaps some bunker work could be done. But all in all, the tees, the greens, and the fairways in outstanding condition.
But tell me if I'm wrong about this. I think I'm right. If that's a course that starts off with a par 3 hole, is it not?
Yes, an island green par 3 hole.
Island green par 3 hole, yeah. I cannot think of any other golf course that I've played, and that's a lot of golf courses, but that led off with a par three hole. I've seen a number of courses that finish with a par three, but leading off with one, that's my best memory of Tana Farms, and I think that maybe I might have played that one time after we did, but it was an 18 hole course then, and it's it was a fun place to play. But the thing that sticks in your mind would of course for me would have been the unusual thing of a par three hole leading the whole round off.
Yeah, it is a little bit different. I'm glad to say that I actually did make par, and my birdie putt from 20 feet lipped out, but it was still a great way to start the round. You know, Len, we were talking about the U.S. Open earlier, and I know the British Open, or the Open Championship, as some people call it, is still on the calendar for a few weeks from now, but the majors are already done for the year, and we're in June. All the majors on U.S. soil are done already, and I know there's some people who still miss the PGA in August, but yeah, it seems like we're flying through the season of majors already, and you get into the third week of June, and we're all done here in America with the majors.
That's true, and you know, I know that the FedEx Cup is not a major; it's a series, though. But it is a good climax to the PGA Tour season. I had not been a big fan at all of seeing the PGA moved out of August. I can see the logic now, and it probably is working out for whatever the powers that be want to move it up earlier in the year. I was always used to Flory's last shot, that being the last major, and then things would taper off. But you know, the FedEx Cup playoffs is it's not a major, it's a money grab, but for the players, it's a good thing, and it does have the smacking of a climax to the year. So we still got a lot of good golf to play, and including the PGA Tour stop in Illinois. So there's a lot of golf left on the calendar.
Well, Len, there'll be a lot of golf happening next year, I think, when Settlers Hill Golf Club out in Batavia gets done. En route to Tana Farms the other day, I drove by Settlers Hill and saw all the dirt piles out there in the fairways. Things are pretty torn up. Architect Greg Martin and the crews are really pushing things around, and I know one of these days we're going to get out there and take a look at the progress they made, but things are in mid-renovation form out at Settlers Hill.
You know, I like that course, you know, just the way it was. I'm sure it'll be better with Greg giving it a touch, but I found that course a lot of fun. It was a course that I, you know, probably played 3-4 times. I'm looking forward to see what they do there. I know that they probably won't be having their new clubhouse until next year, but that was a good track, and it'll be, the work being done on some of these courses around Chicago. That it's really encouraging. Golf has always been a big, strong thing in Chicago, and you see courses like this being touched up, being treated special, given special treatment. Can't help but be a good thing.
Well, I drove past the formerly known Sportsman's Golf and Country Club, now going to be called Heritage Oaks, Northbrook Park District, the other day, and the outer shell of the clubhouse looks complete over there, and the driving range area that I saw looked like it was pretty well grown in, and I wouldn't be surprised. They haven't announced an opening date over there. We're going to get in touch with Director of Golf Greg Barron and see what he has to say. But from what I saw the other day, another month, 5 weeks, and I got to believe they should be ready to open over there. Also, Len, this week, we had a U.S. Open last week, but that doesn't mean there's not any good tournaments this week. And in fact, in the world of women's golf, KPMG is on tap at the Atlanta Athletic Club. And one of the big debates was, of course, this year the players are using rangefinders in the PGA events. And believe it or not, it's gotten some mixed results from players. And some of the more outspoken players on the LPGA Tour thought it wasn't fair to the caddies.
Well, I tell you, I think that the use of rangefinders is really a good idea. I think it can speed up play. Now, the thing of it is, which rangefinder are which you're going to trust the yardage or you're not going to trust the yardage. I don't always trust the yardage on rangefinders that I've had over the years. There have been different kinds have been available, and I think it's overall a good idea. What strikes me as unusual about the whole thing is how good before they had rangefinders. Think about that. There were times when the player had to spot the yardage himself and guess and figure out what it was. It certainly was, the game was a lot different game back then, and I don't know how they ever did it and came up with accurate yardage. Without them, we've become so used to having helpful things like that added to the game of golf. But I don't know why the players really would object to having range fights. Another source of helpful information for their use.
Len, finally, we do have another big tournament this week, the Senior Players Championship on the PGA Champions Tour. And for the second time in 3 weeks, Madison native Jerry Kelly is defending a title and at the historic Firestone Country Club there in Akron, Ohio. And I got to tell you, after a visit to Firestone in person for the first time ever last year, that is quite a facility. And it took a hole-in-one on Sunday by Kelly to win that tournament. I'm hoping that we have some dramatic golf again at historic Firestone this week.
Firestone, that's a big story, that Firestone is staying in the tournament spotlight. That is, for years and years, that was a prominent, very prominent PGA Tour stop. And I'm glad that they're still playing big events there, because that's a top-notch facility. And Jerry Kelly's success of late has been quite interesting. You always think of Steve Stricker being the premier older player out of Wisconsin, but nothing wrong with the way Jerry's playing. He's been really coming on strong. So that's a good tournament, though. That whole tournament is a good one, and I wouldn't give the title to Jerry at all. I think it'll be it's always a good competitive event. There's a lot of good players in the senior ranks.
Well, final note for the week, Len, and we'll call it a tap in here on 18. But Clubhouse is reopened over at Waveland or Sydney Maravitz, whatever it is they're calling it these days. And the first tee of Chicago is settling in there. A lot of money was raised and help on the organizational side from our friends at Kemper Sports Management. So they had the ribbon ceremony cutting last week, and congratulations to them. The facility looks much better, and I know that architect Todd Quitno, who's done recent work at Schaumburg and also White Eagle Golf Club in Naperville, is going to be working with Luke Donald this summer and Pat Goss from Northwestern fame on putting together the little short course and practice facility over there. It ought to be real nice when it turns out.
Absolutely. Waveland was always kind of a fun, quirky place to play, but it's a perfect place for the first tee of Greater Chicago. I mean, it's really a good home base. I'm ready to come back to Chicago from Florida in another week or so, and I hope I can find a way to get over and play that one, because those are significant changes, and all for the better. I think it's great that that facility has opened up and really made some giant strides for junior golf.
Well, Len, we will talk to you next week, and also I'm looking forward to speaking with Tommy Moore, the head pro director of golf at Firestone on Golfers on Golf Radio this Saturday, and Len Zeem, we'll talk to you next week.